Welcome to Component 4, Introduction to Information and Computer Science. This is Unit 2, entitled Internet and the World Wide Web. You may wonder why this material needs to be covered, as it seems to be ubiquitous. The Internet and the World Wide Web are known by everybody, it seems. And yet, many people do not understand its implication, its origins, how to use it, its advantages and disadvantages. These are the topics that we will cover in this unit. The objectives for this unit include gaining the abilities to define the Internet and the World Wide Web, understanding how to connect to the Internet with various options available through your ISPs, including IP addressing, DNS domain names, and fees associated with Internet access, searching the Internet, filtering results, and evaluating credibility of results, Internet security and privacy concerns, ethical considerations through the use of the Internet, and finally, online healthcare applications and the associated security and privacy issues. This will also include a small discussion about HIPAA, which is the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. When we discuss security, we must also consider what devices are usually attacked. One such device is a router. You have routers on your home network. Most businesses use routers. Your ISP uses routers. Routers send traffic from a private network to the Internet and from the Internet to a private network. In some cases, routers are on the Internet and send public information through to another router that is on the public Internet. If a hacker can successfully attack a router, all network traffic can be viewed by the attacker. Traffic can perhaps be redirected to the hacker's equipment for analysis at a later date. Another device that is commonly attacked is the web server. Web servers are the devices that host websites. A website is made up of all of the web pages, images, and files that can be downloaded from that site. If a hacker can successfully attack a web server, the server may not be able to function properly or at all. Imagine what would happen if Amazon.com or eBay.com went down for an entire business day. Think of not only those businesses, but all of the small companies and people who make their living through the sales of their products on those websites. A whole day of wages would be lost, and yet the expenses would continue to occur. Attacks are also made on computers. As you know, computers can store confidential, personal, and corporate data. If a hacker can gain access to this type of information, they may use it for personal gain. For example, if hackers were able to get your checking account username and password, they might write themselves a check. They might sell it to another party, who would then use it for personal gain, or use the information to blackmail you. When you think of hackers attacking devices, one thing to keep in mind is the fact that these types of individuals might use software known as a packet sniffer to read Internet traffic. Through a packet sniffer, for example, in a wireless cafe, an attacker may be able to view all Internet traffic on that wireless network, depending upon the network setup, and subsequently would be able to capture your username and password if you log into your bank or credit card account. They might be able to attack your computer and install adware, which will continuously populate your screen with ads. Ads just pop up, one right after the other. They might also install spyware, which will report on sites that you visit. They are not so much interested in us as individuals in this case. They are more interested, for example, in which websites we visit and in what order, how long we visit a site, and what images we click on. This would slow down our Internet experience and perhaps drag down the other speeds that we are accustomed to on a computer. They might also guess usernames and passwords. This means that you should not use easy-to-guess passwords, and you should change default usernames and passwords. For example, most folks know the default username and password of store-bought wireless routers. You should change the username and password when possible. What can you do to protect yourself from attack? It's important to secure your operating system. You do this through the installation of critical updates. Critical updates fix security flaws and should be installed as soon as they are released. In other words, immediately. Optional updates should not be automatically installed. Only install optional updates if you determine that they are needed. For example, you are offered an optional update that relates to your printer. If your printer is not working properly, then you should install that update. If you see that the update provides some new functionality for your printer and you want that functionality, then install that update. Otherwise, do not install optional updates. After securing your operating system, the next thing to do is to secure your files. You do this through the installation of antivirus or AV protection software. Commercial AV software is more robust than free AV software. Commercial software will catch and quarantine almost all Trojan horse virus and worm attacks before they do any harm to your computer. AV software works by recognizing patterns and stopping what it considers to be bad behavior. These patterns are known as virus definitions and should be updated daily to protect your computer against new attacks. If you decide to install more than one antivirus protection program on your computer, verify that they will both work together before you perform the installation, because some AV software programs do not work well together on the same system. Most home systems do not require more than one AV protection software program. The more valuable the data that you have on the device, the more you should invest to protect it. Another thing you can do is to engage in safe browsing. When surfing, never click on a pop-up window unless you are absolutely sure of its owner. Some pop-ups may indicate that the computer is infected with a virus or a number of viruses, and that you should click the pop-up to cleanse your system. Never trust this type of message. Your AV protection software should locate and remove malware and viruses, so never click on those types of pop-ups. At the end of the previous slide, perhaps you asked, how do I exit a pop-up window if I am not supposed to click on it? What you should do is press the key combination Alt plus F4 to terminate pop-ups. This ensures that the pop-up will not install malware on your system. Do not click anywhere in or on the pop-up window with your mouse. Another thing you can do to secure your system is to turn on a firewall. Firewalls permit or deny a computer's ability to connect to another computer. The firewall may disable what are referred to as ports that should not be opened and restrict the use of ports to certain programs. You should also manage cookies that are placed on your computer. A cookie is a text file that a website stores on your computer. It is important to point out that cookies cannot harm your computer. Websites use cookies to keep track of your preferences and to record web pages that you visit. For example, have you subsequently visited Amazon.com after you logged on and purchased something? The next time that you visit, the screen indicates that the website recognizes you by text that reads, "Welcome back," with your first name listed. Then the site may offer product suggestions. All of this comes from the information that was gathered via the cookie. Some of us view that as a good thing, and others view it as an invasion of privacy. If you view this as an invasion of privacy, then you should not allow first-party cookies to be placed on your computer by website owners. These are almost always okay, unless you do not want them tracking anything that you do on their site. Third-party cookies are placed on your computer by companies authorized by the website owner. In this case, they want to spy on your activity. They want to see where you click, and then gather marketing data about you to sell to website owners. Note that they are not usually interested in what you personally are doing. They are more interested in which site you visited and not your personal identity. Some experts recommend accepting first-party, rejecting third-party, and allowing session cookies. Let's look into cookies a bit further. If you would like to learn how to get to this screen, take a look at the slide notes for steps that apply to Internet Explorer version 8. The recommended settings if you are using Internet Explorer are shown on the slide. You are going to override automatic cookie handling. Then you are going to accept first-party cookies, block or reject third-party cookies, and then allow session cookies. If the information that you store on websites matters, such as your username and password, then you should use complex passwords on the Internet. You should use these on your computer as well. What is a complex password? A complex password contains at least 6 characters. Some experts recommend 8 characters or more, at least one uppercase character, at least one number, and at least one symbol, shown on this slide. Never use common information in a password, such as your name, your birth date, your dog's name, the high school you went to, your spouse's name, and so on. You should also never write passwords on paper. Hackers know how to search the monitor and keyboard and general computer area to find passwords. It is amazing how many people write down their password and stick it to their monitor. You can also protect your computer by knowing who uses it. You can do this through the use of user accounts. If you are using user accounts where each user has their own named account, then this can help you track who is logged in and some of the things they do while they are logged into your computer. You should not log into a computer using the administrator account unless you have to perform some type of an administrator task. Remember that all computer users have their own user account and password. In a home environment, when you are finished using a computer, log out. This will force the next user to log in. Do not set up other users as administrators. Set them up as power users or even just users to decrease the chances of them infecting your computer. If you have to install software on the computer, log in as the administrator, perform the installation or other administrative tasks, then log out. Other Internet security considerations include the following. Never use a public computer to conduct personal business. For example, using a kiosk to check your bank account is not a good idea. Use your personal computer with commercial, up-to-date AV software installed to perform your personal business. Use complex passwords on online accounts to prevent others from viewing or stealing your personal data. Always log out of any session you logged into before leaving the computer. Never open an email from an unknown sender. Do not even click it once. Never open or save an email attachment unless you know and trust the sender. Most of you are familiar with the terms Trojan horse, virus, and worm, but may not fully understand what they mean in relation to the Internet. It is important to fully understand these terms because they are the means by which attackers may compromise your computers, steal your personal information, and make your computers unusable. A Trojan horse is a malware program that usually impersonates a known good file installed on the computer system by replacing the good file. This is usually accomplished by deleting the good file and then installing the Trojan horse file in its place. This type of program gets its name from the Greek Trojan horse myth. The Trojan horse does its dirty work on a certain date through a user action or even on command. Trojans can destroy or copy data, install adware, or install a browser toolbar. Trojans can record keystrokes and then send this to the attacker. Trojans can also scan computer ports. A virus is a computer program that can harm a computer and make it inoperable. Some viruses are only an annoyance. Others completely destroy your system. Viruses usually do not replicate or make copies of themselves on other computers. Removing the virus usually cleans up the computer, but this is easier said than done. Sending a virus via email may replicate the virus. An example of this is the Fun virus, which spread itself via email throughout the world and was very difficult to remove as it made many copies of itself on each infected computer. Macroviruses usually infect Microsoft Office files and install themselves when users click files. That click is known as a click event. The virus programming code is written in the background and will act when the click is performed. A macro is a small program usually written in Visual Basic for Applications, which is the programming language for Microsoft Office. Macroviruses spread when users click files in which the macrovirus resides. Macroviruses can delete files on an infected system and perform almost any other action. Commercial antivirus protection software and current patterns installed on your computer help to protect your computer and your files against macroviruses. A computer worm is a program that works to create a lot of network traffic. Some worms are not malware. They just crawl the network searching for reporting information. Worms may be installed by network engineers and have good intent. However, most worms replicate themselves, making the affected network unusable. In other words, they create so much traffic on the network that the good traffic cannot get through. The I Love You worm, launched in May 2000, successfully attacked millions of computers. This was done because users clicked on an attachment to an email message with the phrase, "I love you," in the subject line. Other types of annoyances and attacks on our privacy include phishing. Phishing is an attempt to trick you into revealing personal information to an attacker so they can impersonate you on the internet or in real life. And, as you can see, it is pronounced like the word phishing. However, the attacker is phishing for information about you. You may receive an email that appears to be from your financial institution, such as your bank, credit card company, eBay, Amazon, or PayPal, asking you to log in to verify a transaction. When you click the link in the email, the website looks as you think it should look. You think that you're logging into your bank. Keep in mind that no reputable organization will ever ask you to log into their website through an email request. If you receive an email or phone call of this sort, you should report the attack to your organization so they are aware of it. Most companies will physically act on reported phishing attempts. Most email software includes the ability to monitor for phishing and move the suspected email to a non-functional or junk email folder. Another type of an annoyance is a hoax. Hoaxes are usually harmless attempts to convince you that something is not true. Hoaxes are typically delivered in an email message. Some hoaxes invite you to send money to someone in another part of the world. Others ask you to contribute to find missing children. Others promote lies about political candidates. When you receive an email of this sort, use your search engine to determine whether the email's message is true by entering the email subject line in a search engine. The result will usually indicate whether the email is a hoax or not. Some websites are available to help you uncloak a hoax. Use trusted internet sites to detect hoaxes, for example, Snopes and Urban Legends Online, as shown on this slide. Never forward email chains without verifying their source. In fact, in my case, when students send me emails that look like potential hoaxes, I research them on the internet. If an email is in fact a hoax, I respond to all of the email's original recipients, informing them that the email is a hoax. The open nature of the internet introduces ethical considerations that we did not have to consider before the internet existed. For example, in some apartments or small neighborhoods, people will gather to share an internet connection with neighbors. Perhaps one home purchases an internet connection and then installs a wireless access point to be shared by other neighbors. This raises the question, should neighbors have the ability to lease an internet connection from an ISP and share the one connection with others? Currently, this practice is not legal. What about downloading software from the internet? Should license key generator sites be allowed to operate at all? Should they be shut down? Should people be able to download pirated software from the internet? Pirating software is a copyright infringement, as is selling unauthorized copies of commercial software, which is usually done at a very low price. All of these practices are currently illegal, yet do exist.